Welcome to Not Another Marketing Podcast, where we're joined by Chris Madden from paid social marketing agency Matchnode.com. So we're talking social ads and how to get better results. Hi, welcome to Not Another Marketing Podcast. My name's John Tromans. Now, before we start talking social ads, I want to quickly mention that you can find lots of links and information in the show notes. And if you enjoy this episode, then subscribe for free on iTunes or Spotify or Stitcher or your favorite podcast app. Just search for Not Another Marketing Podcast. You can find links mentioned during this pod and a full transcript at jtid.co.uk/podcasts/social-ads. Right, let's get on with it. Hi, Chris. Thanks for joining me. Appreciate your time. Tell me a little bit about Matchnode.
Thanks, John. Excited to be here. Thanks for having me. Matchnode is a paid social advertising agency. We are here in Chicago. We have a team of six. We work with B2C brands that are growing, oftentimes scaling. So spend a lot of our time in any of the social ad platforms with our different clients, but definitely the most of that market, based on the market share and where the ad spend is and where we see results, is in Facebook and Instagram ads.
Okay, and where can we find you online?
Matchnode.com.
Fantastic. Right. You're gonna persuade me and a lot of other people that social ads actually work now, because let me tell you a story. I was with somebody just last week. They were boosting Facebook posts. We'll talk a little bit about this later on, but just to give you an idea, they were getting 500 clicks through to their website. They're not getting a single sale. Right? And I see this and I hear this an awful lot, especially from business to business clients. They say it's quite easy to get engagement. It's easy to get a click. It's easy to get a like, and it's easy to drag people to their website. But it's really hard to actually get a sale or a lead or a conversion of a goal. Is this true? Convince me it's not.
Well, I'm very happy to convince you that's not, because we see it every day. Between the start of this podcast and the end of this podcast, they're going to be just within the small team that we have, there'll be dozens, if not hundreds, of conversions happening that will be leads and purchases coming directly from those ads. There's a lot to unpack there. And the first thing to say is, of course, it depends on business. It works better for some businesses than others, assuming the same level of like very high quality execution. Because sometimes I'll hear a story like that and say, I got 500 clicks to my website and nobody bought, and they get mad at Facebook. And then I pull up their website and I think, well, your website's not very good. It's not optimized well. Like, how much traffic do you have outside of these Facebook ads? How many sales do you drive in a normal day? What's your conversion rate? So they say, oh, my conversion rate is 2%. I say, okay, so if you drive 500 clicks, you would expect 10 sales. Okay. Now, like, if that's the case and you have a steady history of traffic and a 2% conversion rate, say from Google ads and organic, direct, other things that you might be doing, marketing events, content marketing, all these different things, I'd say, okay, cool. Now let's look what you're doing in the Facebook ads. So you really have to take apart each piece. And it might be that the Facebook creative, the ad in the Facebook, the creative in the Facebook ad isn't ideal. There isn't continuity between the message and the ad and what the page is that people will get to on their website. People get confused and they leave. It might be that the website loads slowly and very frequently. You said boosting posts. If I hear boosting posts, I also hear, or I start to think, those ads are not properly targeted. Just like anything in life that's worth doing, the first pass, you're not going to get it right. And so you need to keep at it. And it's a lot of trial and error. It's a lot of optimization, and there's no silver bullet. It's a series of incremental improvements, both on your website, assuming you have product market fit, on the Facebook ad side and creative, on the Facebook ad side and who you're targeting.
Okay, well, let's start with landing pages then, because I'm kind of like a bit of a believer that every page is a landing page. But I suppose when you've got social advertising, it's nice to be able to drag people to a specific page. And a lot of things I see is that people are trying to do a bit too much on a landing page. Well, give me some ideas on an idea. What would be a perfect landing page?
Great question. To your initial point, every page is a landing page. When you look in Google Analytics, of course, they call landing pages the first page that a person visits on your website. I understand and I buy that definition, when we talk about, when we think of landing pages, we are thinking about a post-ad page that we're creating specifically to a campaign or a concept that is behind that ad. So a couple of key points here. This is a huge piece of our business. First, don't even look at your landing page on desktop or a laptop. A lot of people are sitting at work and they're looking at these landing pages that look great. Build it for mobile first. Almost all the traffic on Facebook, not almost all, but say 70% of traffic on Facebook ads is mobile. So you have to be driving a mobile experience. First thing is build a mobile landing page, not a desktop or one that looks nice on your laptop. Second thing is attention ratio. And some of this we've learned a lot, and we've worked over the years a lot with Unbounce, which is our preferred landing page platform. I know there are a few competitors out there that are probably also quite good. We've just worked with Unbounce for years and really like it. But one of the things we've learned from them is the concept of an attention ratio. It's the ratio of things you can do on a page versus the things you want the person to do on the page, and it should be one. Meaning, counts up all the clicks, clickable links on your landing page. If you've got a navigation bar or a footer on your landing page, I would argue that's not a good landing page. People can just go as soon as they click out to one of those places on your navigation, you may think, oh, that's nice. We want to let people go deeper in our website if they want to. You've lost them. They're out of your flow. They're not going to convert. You should have one thing for them to do. If you want them to become a lead right there on that landing page, then have the form there. And the only thing that's clickable is the button to submit the form. Now, that's a very hard rule. Of course, you might put a learn more button after testing because people are bouncing off the landing page, maybe the complex sale. So first thing is mobile first. Second thing is don't give them a lot of places to click. Fewer places to click, the better. You really just want one. Totally understand, even on our pages that we build for clients, oftentimes there's two or three, but don't have 100 because I've seen plenty of pages that have 100. Thirdly, they have to be fast. You have to load quickly. You're going to lose people. Heard different stats, but every second it takes a page to load, your conversion rate drops by 20%. So a lot of people don't buy that. A lot of people don't do that. They load slowly. So those are just a few quick things, but really another key concept in landing pages is continuity. Meaning, you don't want to show people an ad for a promotion with a specific percentage off for some holiday that's coming up, and then show them a landing page that doesn't say anything about that promotion and doesn't mention the holiday. People are like, wait, did I click on the right thing? And as soon as they start to think that, there's that like cognitive dissonance clicks in, and they're gone. We all have thousands of things bombarding us every hour that we could choose to pay attention to. So as soon as you lose them, and as soon as you make them think, wait, this isn't what I thought I was going to see, it's over.
I think it's good sometimes as well to look at the words on the page as well. It's very easy to get into a, particularly with a landing page where you have space, is to get into a situation where you're saying too much. You just want to, your social ad is going to have some value to it, be it an offer or whatever the value is. You carry that value through, but we don't waffle. We just keep things simple.
Yeah, totally agree with you on that. We could do a year of podcasts about copywriting and like what are those best practices, but would definitely agree. One of the things that we like to do is to write the copy on the page on a plain white piece of paper and like write the words you want to have on the page separately. So many people dive, like I just mentioned Unbounce, so many people will dive right into their landing page builder or the page that they're copying to edit for this particular campaign and just write directly in the page. Oh, there's three bullets here. So like, what are my three bullets going to be? And like, I really believe, maybe to your point, you just need to step out of the computer really and be like, what is the message we're trying to write, and write it out, not necessarily by hand, but on a blank sheet of paper if possible. So that really helps. And then people, there's a great Seth Godin post today about how you have 10 words. People are going to read 10 words on your page. So what 10 words do you want them to be to summarize, to like make them want to go deeper into your page? Really like that a lot. And so thinking about the reality that especially on a mobile page, people flip very quickly. So the certain words that you emphasize are the ones they're going to see. They need to draw the people deeper in if you're going to write more for them to want to read more.
And having multiple landing pages, is this a good idea? Maybe doing some A-B testing. I mean, even if your sample isn't big enough for proper A-B testing, is it a good idea to have different landing pages and test different things out?
That's a tough one because you mentioned a small sample and that really matters. You have to combine the qualitative with the quantitative. And when people say qualitative, everybody thinks right away, oh, you do a survey. And like, sure, of course. But you also just have to use common sense sometimes by looking at the deeper metrics that are behind why your page might not be converting. So even if you only have 100 visitors to your page over, say, a 5-day period, you're not going to be able to A/B test that page. And you shouldn't say, oh, I'm going to change the color of my button and see what that does. That's not going to help. What we would suggest and what we try to do is you look at what the behavior was. So in your case, 500, or your first example that we started with, 500 people come and nobody clicks. Well, or nobody buys. Well, okay, let's say, for example, that's a high-priced product or it's a premium product. It's a very nice thing that you might be able to buy, and it tends to be on the higher end of cost because it's well-made and because it's a premium brand. What we would do in that case is we would move the price higher up in the funnel, sometimes all the way up to the ad. And so you say, okay, we have the hypothesis that people are not buying because they're surprised by how expensive it is. Like, put the price of the item in the ad so that no one will even click on the ad if they don't want to pay $500 or whatever the high number is. So you have to use some intuition. You have to use some common sense. Some of that comes with experience, certainly. Because we do this all the time, we might be able to see these things quickly. But you should have a hypothesis to test. And just don't test small things, test big things.
Okay, let's move on to Facebook ads. Oh, man.
Happy to.
Yeah, Facebook ads. You could probably pile everything on the internet that's been written about Facebook ads, and it would just go to the moon, I would imagine. Okay, boost a post or actually have an ad.
It's not even close. If you want to do the sort of iteration that's the only way on which you can compete and be profitable, you have to be making ads. And I think most people by now understand that those two outputs can look exactly the same to the person you're advertising to the audience that's receiving your message. The formats are exactly the same. You can have a post that is made in Ads Manager, but we would almost never recommend you boost a post.
Okay. So is it all, particularly with, let's talk about Facebook for a little bit. Is it all about targeting the correct audience on Facebook? Because you can waste an awful lot of money, can't you?
That is probably where we spend more time. When we are going to do a test, we are testing and changing out audiences very frequently. And it depends upon the scale. If it's a small or medium-sized business, sometimes there's not as many sources to get that data to make a lookalike audience off of. And oftentimes the sources can be actions taken on your own website. So say people adding to cart, if you have an e-commerce site, you can just create an audience of that to retarget those people or make a lookalike audience. So yes, audience segmentation in an intelligent way. Some people might be selling three different products that are clearly, you know, one's a hobbyist, one's a professional, and, you know, one is extremely expensive because it's the top of the market thing for a super professional. And so we would create lookalike audiences off of people who saw each of those pages and understand that they use the product differently, and then back into ad creative or copy that speaks to each of those slightly different use cases because they're different audiences. So it's really like goes back to basic marketing, where like if you have the sort of business where there are common sense segments, you should be creating different lookalike audiences based on those segments and their behavior on your website or the list of people who purchased one segment versus another in the past. So yes, audience is so, so important. There's so much nuance. Assuming you have creative that is good enough. You know, like our thing with creative is, does it work and is it good enough? And those are a little bit, well, does it work is not subjective. It's really about the metrics behind, is the ad working? Is it good enough is sometimes subjective. Certainly we have larger brand clients where there's very specific brand guidelines and approvals and things like that that we need to get into. So it depends on the situation. Sometimes you can't change creative as much as you'd like to for certain constraints. But we're a very analytical agency. If creative's on one end and analytical's on the other, we tend towards analytical. So we tend to test audiences when in doubt.
You mentioned lookalike audiences. Can you give me an example of how that would kind of work in the real world?
Yeah, sure. So if you're an e-commerce company, and you sell, say, t-shirts, and handbags on the same website. And it's the same design. You can get this design A on a t-shirt, or you can get design A on a handbag, and there's lots of different designs. And maybe the different designs fall into different categories, different types of people. And so one thing that we would do is you would take all the people, say, in the past year that bought handbags, and usually the client is very happy to upload that list. And it's a hash list, so it's private, that there's no risk of that data being lost or out there or hacked. And so you upload your list of handbag buyers, and you similarly upload your list of t-shirt buyers. And now you've got a list of the exact number of people who bought handbags that are on Facebook, same thing with t-shirts. And so you can retarget those people. Maybe this is the sort of thing that people might buy quarterly, and you have a lot of different designs. You know, these people at a certain time of year tend to buy a handbag from you. The other thing that you do with those same two lists, handbags and t-shirts, is you create lookalike audiences. So basically that is telling Facebook, these are the people who bought in the past. We want to find people that are most similar to them, most likely to buy. And you can cut that into percentiles of 1% up to 10% with everything in between. So 1%, 1 to 2, 2 to 3, all the way up to 10% lookalike audiences. Yeah, in the United States, there are 200 million people on Facebook. So a 1% lookalike audience has 2 million people in it. You can cut it further from there, but the algorithms, Facebook algorithms, have been getting so good that we're doing less and less of layering on top of those lookalike audiences, because the audiences are just working.
So you're basically saying everybody who likes this handbag, okay, everybody who bought this handbag, and we're going to show you this t-shirt or these shoes because we know you might like them.
Yeah, everybody who bought this handbag, not everybody who likes the handbag.
Yeah, sure.
You know, like people who, an interest audience for handbags would be very unlikely to perform. Even if you might think that you know a brand of handbags that you think is similar to yours or you aspire to be like, that is very unlikely to perform as well as a 1% lookalike audience of people who bought your handbags.
Gotcha.
And separately, like I think you were saying also, like shoes, like they bought a handbag, so maybe they'll be interested in shoes or t-shirts. No, not really. It's like they bought a handbag, so let's find other people who will buy handbags possibly. They bought shirts. Here's a look like audience of people who bought shirts, and we'd show them a shirt ad, not a handbag ad, if you're following me. So like the segmentation would run from the ad creative to the audience, then to the landing page, to your point, to your previous question. And then the landing page could have one thing to do on it. And for whatever reason, you might want to say, click to see t-shirts. If for some reason, you don't want to drop them out of the homepage that has handbag, shoes, and t-shirts. You know this person's interested in t-shirts. They saw a t-shirt ad. They're in your t-shirt audience. You show them a t-shirt landing page and say, click to see t-shirts. And that's another conversion, you know, in your conversion stream that you can optimize off of. You can create a lookalike audience of that, because you can use the Facebook pixel to create any audiences or lookalike audiences and then move them into your t-shirt page. So that's an example of kind of how it all comes together.
Cool. And how does remarketing fit in with this on the Facebook pixel and things like that? How does that work in there? Do we need a certain level of traffic to be able to do remarketing on Facebook?
Good question. Great question. Maybe, you know, if you have a type of business that does 5 transactions a month, and you want to retarget people who bought in the last year, and you have 60 buyers, I mean, that could be a wonderful business. It might just be a very small side project for somebody. Both things could be wonderful. But the reality is you can't create a remarketing audience off of 60 people and expect much to happen. Now, the good news is you're not going to be able to spend more than like $2 into that audience. It's not going to cost you anything either. But like in a more realistic example, maybe a more useful example, we have started to take a broader definition of remarketing or retargeting people off. Often to think you bought before, now I'm going to retarget you. We sometimes think of it as anybody who's interacted with your brand one way or another on your website. We then will create different retargeting audiences. So going back to the like the t-shirt or the apparel example, we could have a list of people that we want to retarget that have purchased. Now, depending on the sort of t-shirt, it's very unlikely someone's going to buy a t-shirt from you this week and then also want to buy a t-shirt from you next week. So we have to be empathetic to the people on the other side of the ads, because there's like nothing worse than bad advertising. There's nothing worse than bad retargeting. We've all had the experience of something that we've purchased And then that thing is following you around on the internet for 6 months. You're like, I already bought it. Please stop showing me the ad. I'm not going to buy, you know, a t-shirt from you a day for 6 months.
Amazon.
So Amazon. So we will often, we almost always will exclude recent buyers. So we could say, don't show this ad to anybody who's bought in the last 90 days. However, has things in their shopping cart, but they didn't purchase. So that's a very common one that we probably also all experience. You put things in your shopping cart, you don't buy it, it kind of follows you around on Facebook and Instagram. Again, there are examples, there are ways in which to do that, that it works well and is respectful of the ad budget and the audience. And then there are ways to do it that are just like too much and the frequency gets too high. It's not intelligent. You know, like you need to think through the buying cycle of your business and when you should be excluding people who've already purchased. One last point on expanding the concept of retargeting. We think of retargeting too as, say, anybody who's visited your website. So let's say you have a lot of traffic and a lot of people are buying t-shirts, but you know 97% of people aren't buying t-shirts because you only have a great 3% conversion rate. So you, that 97% is a very fertile place to look for more buyers potentially. However, a lot of them visit your site, are clear that they don't want to buy from you. That's why they didn't. So what we do is we will create an audience of, say, the top 25% of traffic on your site or top 10% of traffic on your site. And you can do that by time on site. So it will exclude all those people who like just bounced off your site or like accidentally clicked or got there and realized they didn't want to be there or that it's not for them. And people who've been coming back, engaging on your site, hanging out, but not taking the action you want, those are usually people to go back to.
Let's talk a little bit about creative and actual ads, which is more of my thing. Are we talking about,
sure,
should we create multiple ads for the same audience? I'm a big believer that we look at the audience deeply. What are they like? What language do they like? How do they like to, what things do they, what is this person who's viewing the ad? What are they like? Is this important in creating the creative?
Extremely important in the creative. Yeah. And it's better, you know, for us from an agency perspective, it's better. The more the client knows about that already, the better. Like the business owner or the people who are inside the business hopefully already know that. If they don't know that and they haven't studied it and thought about it a lot, it's going to be a bad sign for Facebook ads working at all. So it really works well when you have product market fit. You know who your market is. You segmented that market into, you know, intelligently. And so absolutely would look deeply into the audience, say, who is this person? What is their day like? What are the other things that are bombarding them? What are the things they care about? And not that you want to like be too psychological about it, because in our experience, just being very clear is what works best, almost in the fewest number of words possible. Like clear always beats clever, in our opinion. I think people like, not in our opinion, our experience, people like to be clever and copy and ads. And it's like, because it's a creative endeavor, but it's much better to just be very clear with who you are, what you're offering them. Because again, you want them to just flip past it if they're not interested. You want to grab the people who are interested. So you should create multiple pieces of creative in a single ad set. We are, almost every single account we work on is heavy, heavy video, and not video like you don't need to hire a video crew and go out and shoot original footage for 3 days. Like what you can do on a phone and the various editing apps out there right now is extremely powerful and works really well. We're talking about 15-second videos with small pieces of animation. You can find somebody on Fiverr or Upwork for $20 to help you with that or less. And so one quick tip would be, in the same ad set, you put a still image and a video as two ads, and it can be like the exact same thing, meaning the imagery and what it says and everything about it is as similar as possible, but one's technically a video with some motion on it, the other is a still image. And the reason you do that, we see that working, Facebook has told us, is some people, Facebook's algorithm knows some people like video and they will click on video and engage with video. Other people don't, they like still images. So when you put both into an ad set, the algorithm optimizes for whatever the audience's preference is. So if you only have one or the other, you're automatically going to miss or have to pay more to get into some segment of your audience that doesn't prefer that format that you're offering them.
Right. So Facebook is clever enough to understand that this person prefers more still image advertising than video advertising, and it will deliver the still image.
Absolutely. The algorithm is that sophisticated for sure.
Let's talk quickly about Instagram, because you can go shopping on Instagram now, can't you? Does this work? Do people buy stuff on Instagram?
I believe that they do, and I believe in the future people are going to buy more and more on Instagram. So Instagram shopping is an organic tool. There are, you know, this DTC, as they call it, direct consumer brands, which is a perfect case study of, for better or worse, small companies, lean companies that have been completely enabled by Facebook and Instagram ads. Like this class of business would not exist or would not be thriving without this channel. So on Instagram, those companies have done extremely well and they have very large followings. And so, yeah, there is this Instagram shopping thing that a company can load up all their products into Instagram, and those products will, you know, be viewable by people who are on their pages. Now, you cannot promote that. You can't put paid dollars behind that at this point. Maybe in the future you can. People buy things on Instagram in our experience in the same way that they do from Facebook, and that is through then, you know, the website, the landing page, website flow for an e-commerce company or leads for a lead generation focused business. So we do see that working. It's different, of course. It works differently. It works differently for meaning there's some businesses that could thrive in the Facebook newsfeed but won't do well on Instagram. Of course, it's just an extremely visual medium that's different from Facebook ads. So while they have the same engine and the same backend, because of course Facebook owns Instagram, and the ads are run in the exact same way, and you just literally click a button to have it be on Instagram or not, it does work differently. People do buy things from it. And, you know, you said Facebook's been around for 20 years. Yes, it has. But the ad platform in its sophistication is probably really like kicked up in the last 5 to 6 years. And Instagram's a part of that. You'll recall when Facebook bought Instagram and it first allowed you to promote posts, you couldn't even link to anything. And there's this link in bio thing that everybody knows on Instagram. You literally have to say, click from this image that I paid to promote to my bio. And then in that bio, you'll find a little random link I put in there. Click that link. And then that's going to take you to where you can buy the thing. Now, of course, there's overlays where you just say, you know, click to buy. And there's carousels that you can flip through and video and stories and all the rest. So Instagram is a very powerful piece of Facebook's platform. People do buy stuff on it. Buying on the platform is generally organic through products, but it's an advertising platform the same way Facebook is. Last thing I'll say about this is this, you mentioned what's going to look like 20 years. I'm not sure, but in 5 to 10 years, there's going to be a whole lot more commerce run through Facebook as Facebook moves to this decentralized model with, you know, the Facebook cryptocurrency that's coming is going to be very embedded in all these products so that you can move money, move value more easily when you want to buy something, send money to your family or friends, whatever the case might be.
The bank of Facebook, what could go wrong?
I wonder if it's going to be better than worse than the Bank of England and the US Federal Reserve.
you could be right there. YouTube is social media.
I'm not sure which one would be better.
Yeah. YouTube is social media. Do YouTube ads work or does everybody skip them?
They work in our experience for large brands that have sort of tapped out what's available to them on Facebook and Instagram. Of course, there's certain types of companies, classes of companies that YouTube works extremely well for. The whole maker movement, learning how to do something on Instagram. We were talking with a company recently that makes, it's not a 3D printer, but for simplicity, they call it a 3D printer. And so they have this large channel with people making things on their 3D printers. And so people want to go learn how to do things like that. Another thing that's coming to mind is like learning how to play an instrument or learning how to cook. So for certain types of businesses that are selling guitars or that are selling recipes, YouTube can be very powerful. YouTube ads, to your specific question, I think we have not had a whole lot of really positive use cases. We're a direct response agency. We're trying to get people to buy the thing from the ad that we're showing or fill out the lead over time, even if it might be a longer consideration sort of purchase. But we don't see so YouTube ads in our experience has been, given that we are direct response, has been more of something that like ties it together, like a display almost, where we can show people who are already considering this product, kind of remind them that we're out there. The other thing that we see that you might notice on YouTube ads is they tend to be very large companies. So it is very analogous to TV ads. A lot of large companies just take their TV ads, they edit or adapt them for YouTube, and now you've got all this reach. I think some of those lines are blurring, But then, you know, there's concern, of course, about like, what are your ads playing next to? And that is another thing for, you know, similar to the Facebook discussion we're having, where just like, you have to play whack-a-mole sometimes to be sure that your ad is not showing up next to objectionable content on YouTube.
We can't forget Twitter, can we? There's this, I don't suppose it's new, but it's reasonably new, where you can pay $99 a month, £99 a month, €99 a month. It's called promote mode, I think, where it'll just basically pick first 10 posts that you post. It'll promote them as an ad. Does this work?
I would be so shocked if it did. It does not work. So the idea that like your next 10 posts need to be promoted no matter what, and you're just going to write them and because you don't have time to remember to go in and promote them, and they're just automatically going to be promoted, I don't think that's a great idea. Now, if you want to pay €100 or £100 or $100 a month to do that, and you're some sort of, I can see why people might have a reason to want to do that. If they're trying to expand their reach because they're, I almost said run for political office. That was a bad example. But if they want to expand their reach because they're in the media business or, you know, things like that, where you're really just looking to reach people and try to get people to follow your account because over time you want to stay in touch with them. It's like a personal or media branding platform that is what we've seen working on Twitter ads. Now, like, don't want to get too deep into the muck and the details, but Twitter did reboot their algorithm like 9 months ago, and they started reaching out to businesses and agencies and said, hey, you got to give Twitter ads another try, because it's not a secret at all that Twitter ads have not worked well to drive direct response. If you're trying to get a purchase or a lead, that's a tough place to go fishing. So they retooled their algorithm supposedly 9 months ago. We have a hard time getting it to work with some of our clients that have relatively large ad spends, direct lines right into Twitter reps, Twitter ad reps. And I would tread carefully. And if you have a specific use case, like we said, where it's a media thing and you're trying to reach people, again, maybe you're a big brand and you're trying to fill out a much larger integrated strategy where you're already tapping out search, you're already tapping out you know, other paid social platforms like Facebook and Instagram, then I get that. There's people who want to advertise on Twitter. But if you're a small business or a medium-sized business and you're looking to get ROI, we have not seen it.
Okay. I was reading the promotes FAQ from Twitter just before we chatted today, and they say that on average people are getting 35 extra followers a month from spending £99, $99, €99, which works out at £2.82 a follow. Now, that sounds like a lot of money for a Twitter follower to me.
Right. What are you going to do with that?
Exactly.
You know, is somebody has an ego and they just want to have followers? Sure. Like,
you might as well just go and buy something. You might as well just head out and just buy exactly. Buy 10,000 for $50, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Exactly. That's not the business we're in. You know, it was a long time ago that people were buying likes on Facebook, and I'm not talking about buying likes in a like underhanded gray hat way. I'm talking about you run an ad to get a like on Facebook, and everybody knows how that went. It's like you're buying this vanity metric at best. You know, at worst, it's decreasing in value over time as Facebook's organic reach went to nil. So no, we if you want to pay £3 for a follower, you have good reason to do it. You know, you've got your own reasons.
Yeah.
But it's not something that we would see be broadly applicable or successful.
Okay. So let's finish off. Three things, just three things that you think are the most important to get right when you're creating a social ad.
So the entire thing is about, and people don't like to use the funnel visualization anymore, but it's just so simple and it's just helpful when we don't think it really looks like a funnel, but I would say at the top, consider your audience. And then as we discussed, like the audience piece is really the piece where you can find wins. And then in the middle, you really need to have specific landing pages for a specific campaign so that you can work that combination, that continuation from the ad through to the landing page, through to whatever you want them to do. You have to be able to build the whole story. You have to build the through line through. And so that's the ad to the landing page piece. And then finally, it sounds like your friend that you talked to last week that got 500 clicks and no sales, you have to iterate. So you have to have a plan for, you don't even have to plan for iteration, you just have to plan for iteration. So if he spent, say, 500 pounds for his 500 clicks, well, is that his whole budget? Like, why did he blow all that in one go? Like, maybe he has a 2,000 pound budget over 6 weeks, and his next, and he looked at those 500 people who clicked and didn't buy. Well, what was their time on site? Did they bounce? Did they stay a long time and look at the product but not buy it? Oh, maybe they're price sensitive. So, like, if that's the end of the story, I don't think you're trying hard enough. So you have to iterate. So iteration is just, like, absolutely essential. And your first go is not gonna work. So one, audience, two, landing page, three, iterate.
Fantastic. Thanks, Chris. Really appreciate your time. It's been really interesting to
be honest.
Really interesting. Quickly, give me some contact information about Matchnode in case anybody wants you to do it all for them, which sounds a lot easier.
Yeah, it's easier for our clients, and we have fun with it, and we enjoy helping people with it. So like I said, matchnode.com is our website. My email is Chris, C-H-R-I-S, at matchnode.com. You can feel free to reach out to me. There are, of course, contact forms on our website. I'm on Twitter, not super active. My personal handle is MaddenCM, M-A-D-D-E-N-C-M. So feel free to give me a follow, and definitely reach out if you're interested in talking more about this.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, John.
If you've enjoyed this pod or found it useful, then don't forget to subscribe on iTunes or Spotify or your favorite podcast app. Just search for Not Another Marketing Podcast. Thanks for listening.